weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Big thanks to Bennett De Silva for driving us through the afternoon. It's Thursday, the 25th of July, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up today, we're live to Paris as our men's seven side gear up for tonight's Olympic quarterfinal. Meanwhile, our boxers will find out shortly who their Olympic opponents will be. There's also Olympic soccer underway. More on that with Rebecca Cray and Paul Corry in studio. Plus, we've eyes on Shelburne as FC Zurich stand between Damien Duff and progression in the Conference League. We'll hear from Stephen Kenny as he returns to European club action at St. Pat's. And we'll check in with Jeff Shepherd about all things Team USA. If you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552 or contact us on WhatsApp 087 187 9200.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. Rebecca and Paul are with me in studio. Lots of football happening both in the Olympic Games and also a little bit further away from home. Let's start with Shells and FC Zurich, Paul. It's kicked off at 6 o'clock and not the best start for Shells.
No, it's not good news, Marie. FC Zurich have gone 1-0 up within the first 60 seconds. And it's exactly what you don't want for Damien Duff and his Shell side. Like, the team that he has picked is probably one that is set up to go over to Switzerland and can try contain the opposition and try limit the number of chances. But when you concede so early on, I mean, it really does throw the game plan out the window, like I mentioned. And it's going to be trying to limit how many chances they give FC Zurich now, between now and half time and then towards the end of the game. But a desperate start, and by the looks of the first 3-4 minutes, FC Zurich have plenty up their sleeve.
A lot of the times we're not sure the standard of the different leagues and teams that are Ireland teams are playing against when they do go into Europe. Do we know what FC Zurich are like?
Well, probably not too much about FC Zurich themselves, but I think if you look at Swiss teams over the last number of years in European competitions, they have done quite well. And even when you look at the Swiss national side in the European Championships, how strong they were and how much of the contingent was actually based out of their domestic league. So they're going strong in the league, in the sense that they've won their opening game. And they've obviously done well enough last year to qualify for this European competition. But they're early on in their season. You somewhat hope that you can catch them on the hop, because we're so much in the midst of our season, and you would expect that our players are maybe much sharper with match fitness. But on the basis of the first 5 minutes, this looks like a really, really tough draw.
Okay, well, we'll be keeping an eye on that throughout the programme. We'll also be chatting about St. Pat's. They're in Conference League second qualifying round action. They play Liechtenstein Cup winners Vaduz, who I don't know anything about. Maybe by the time we get to Polkar, you might know a little
bit
more about
them.
Well,
they're playing the Liechtenstein second division. Or sorry, they're from Liechtenstein but playing the Swiss second division.
Oh, well, there we go.
Random one.
There's
for you.
A little bit of information straight away. Rebecca Cray, there is a lot of football in the Olympics today. It is only the group stage is only just getting going. Who are the favourites?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell. A lot of people are calling Spain as the favourites, given the kind of, you know, the amount of great players they have. Obviously, US are always up there. You know, it's a tournament that they love to compete in, and obviously being four-time champions, they'd be looking to get the trophy back to the US. Obviously, Canada are the reigning champions currently, but yeah, for me, Spain are looking quite strong.
You're going on your holidays to the Olympics to watch some football. That's pretty good.
Yeah, exciting. Now I'm going over on Tuesday to watch Australia play the US. So great game to watch. Obviously, Emma Hayes' first kind of, you know, tournament with the US as well.
A good one there.
Yeah, most definitely. So I'm looking forward to
Where's that on?
It's in Marseille.
Oh, unbelievable.
Yeah, looking forward to see what she does with her team. Okay, so staying with Olympic action, there was a big sevens game today, and before we cross to Damien O'Meara at the Stade de France, here's a flavour of the action from Ireland's final pool stage match against New Zealand a little bit earlier on.
We are ready to go. It is New Zealand against Ireland for a place in the quarter final and the chance to avoid Fiji. Again, back in his pace this time, Zach Ward around the outside. Brilliant stuff from the Irish number 5, and they have the first score. Zach Ward, brilliant day yesterday. Ireland lead by 5-0.
Rich, offside and
penalty. Offside against New Zealand. Chance here for Kennedy again. Little step, and the pass to Jordan Conroy. Conroy for Ireland! Two tries in, they're going to go to the TMO. It looked good from here. Brilliant from Conroy, brilliant from Kennedy. And Ireland 10-0. Lead New Zealand in the final pool match of the men's sevens here in Paris. Fully deserved as well. They have been the better side. The big concern now is how bad that injury is to Jordan Connolly. Went face down into the dirt there. The tackle came in. Conversion Roche is the formality. It's 12 points on the board for Ireland. Two tries to the good at halftime. And hopefully Jordan Connolly is none the worse for that knock he took scoring the try. And it's now over. New Zealand trying to put some phases together here. And pushing off the tackle and away they go. Well, that's not what Ireland wanted straight from the kickoff. And that man, Carter, what a player and what an individual try that was. Ireland full off the tackle, New Zealand almost at the line. Where's that ball? It's there, McCarvey Black. That will square it up with 45 seconds to go. The conversion would prove the difference if it goes over. The conversion attempt being taken out of your screen and New Zealand have knocked it over. I can tell you the conversion has gone over. So they lead by 14 points to 12 and that will be it. Ireland dominating possession, dominating territory. New Zealand just more clinical when it counted. And that is a hugely frustrating defeat for Ireland.
Yeah, real frustrating afternoon for Ireland. So they are now going to play reigning champions Fiji in this evening's quarterfinals. Damien O'Mara is with us live from Paris. Damien, how are you? How are you getting on over there?
I'm not too bad at all. I'm in good form. They've just reopened the stadium ahead of the evening session and it was beautifully silent at about 5 to 7. And as the sevens tend to do, there's like, I think it's like the... I was going to try and say like the French version of Marc McCabe. I don't know who the hip DJs are. I'm too old for all that stuff nowadays. But they've a DJ here to drum up the crowd, but they're after bringing out a marching band who are parading around the stadium in front of us. So if you hear that in the background, it's the attempt to drill up the atmosphere. It's a bit of an odd one that we had 69,000 people here yesterday and the roof nearly came off the place. Like, it was a phenomenal atmosphere. And I think it must have been a case where people just identified, let's go to the opening day, let's go and enjoy it, because the numbers are down slightly today and the atmosphere certainly isn't quite as strong as it was. And I think that's probably a fair assessment of what the mood must be like in the Irish team room at the moment. We've had a two-hour break between the sessions, between the first session ending and the gates opening ahead of the second session. And there's, you know, media from all over the world and a lot of people who travel on the sevens regularly in the media room kind of analysing how things have gone. And it was put to me, I thought, quite succinctly by Ugo Monya, the former England and British and Irish Lions winger who's here working for one of the American broadcasters, that Ireland have quite literally gone within 45 seconds of being on the podium to being eliminated from the competition, because that is the significance of that. That is the significance of that defeat, or the potential significance of that defeat. So to put it into context, Ireland went into that game against New Zealand knowing that victory would see them top Pool A, and if they were to top Pool A, they would have faced a repeat fixture against South Africa, who they beat yesterday. Instead, the result of having lost to New Zealand is that we face Fiji, as you've mentioned. Fiji are the back-to-back gold medal champions. They've won 15 matches out of 15 matches played since rugby was reintroduced into the Olympics at the Rio Games in 2016, and it is a massive challenge. Nobody is going to shy away from that. A really disappointing performance in the second half from Ireland, in the fact that they led 12-0, as you mentioned, at half-time, and those two tries from New Zealand, the second of which was converted late on, seeing Ireland ultimately run out 14 points to 12 winners. Ireland didn't shy away from the fact that there was disappointment in the camp, but also a need to regroup. And I've been chatting to the Ireland captain, Harry McNulty.
Harry, listen, I don't think there's any way to shy away from it, considering the dominance you had. A bit really disappointing not to come away with a result.
Yeah, massively. I think we played really well for most of that game. It's just, it's annoying, like, some calls just go your way or they don't go your way. And, you know, their first try, really, like, I actually didn't even touch the ball, so I don't know how it ended up coming back off me, but, you know, that's just the way the game goes. And, you know, we just need to be tighter. They scored a try straight away off that. Like, we can't let them score, like, without even going through a rock, so that's on us again. And them going the length again, that's on us. Like, so rather than us being beaten, I think we lost that game ourselves. And it's disappointing when it's that sort of way, because you know you can do much better.
The nature of this game is that the margins can flip on a coin, and equally the game's come thick and fast. Not an awful lot of time for you to feel sorry for yourselves. You just have to refocus, try and get the positives and recover for a big task against Fiji this evening.
Yeah, this is a joyous sevens. If a result doesn't go your way, you just have to forget about it pretty quick and take the learnings that you got from that and get ready, focused for the next game. And at least you don't have like a week to dwell on it, maybe like in a 15s campaign or something like that, and it can really start affecting the camp, where this is just on to the next one. And, you know, what an awesome opportunity to play Fiji in the Olympics. They've never lost a game, so I think we're going to relish that opportunity and go for it.
But equally, you always want your best performance to be your next performance, and there seems to be a sense there are still gears to come from this team, and, you know, you're now going to need that to click later on this evening.
Yeah, definitely. yeah, you don't want to, you don't really want to peak in your pools, but you definitely want to be playing well and get some hard games and some hard wins. And I think we did that in the first two games, and you know, really should have won that game. But again, that's how it goes. You can't dwell on it. We're in the quarterfinal. That's where we want to be. So let's worry about that, and then we'll keep going. Good luck tonight. Yeah, thank you very much. Cheers.
I'm very disappointed. Harry McNulty there. Damien O'Mara is with us all the way from Paris. So Damien, he said they kind of had no one to blame but themselves, and they're going to take the learnings. What do they need to improve on heading into this Fiji game?
I think game management was a big issue. Listen, there was a nervousness in the camp, there's no doubt about that, but they got that. They have to have got that out of their system yesterday. There's no excuse for lapses of concentration. I think they had three opportunities where they tried to pick and go on the New Zealand line. Clearly weren't going to get through, but instead of maybe trying to recycle the ball, or, you know, I think the point was made on RT television by Darren Cave earlier that, you know, in the 15s game, you might try and carve out a drop goal opportunity. I think composure is going to be a big, big thing for them tonight. There's a Fiji team who have been brilliant over the course of the opening day, beat Uruguay 40 points to 12 yesterday, and then absolutely demolished a highly fancied United States team by 38 points to 12, and then followed it up today by beating France 19 points to 12. So, like, Fiji have tapered brilliantly through the pool stages, and they're going to be out for blood tonight. So I think composure is a big thing. I'm not 100% sure if communication is possibly something that they need to work on. We mentioned, like, the cavernous nature of the Stade de France. None of the players other than Hugo Keenan had ever played here before. They hadn't even trained here before in advance of the game. And you could certainly see there were frustrations, even when there were 12 points to nil up, there were frustrations creeping in at times, maybe about some of the decision-making. So it's going to be interesting to see the, you know, like, you could see the body language as they walked off afterwards. They knew that they'd basically made a rod for their own backs with the fact that they'd lost the game. And then to have lost a game that you were so dominant in and in control of. It's going to be interesting. Jordan Conroy was really uncomfortable walking off and walking down towards the tunnel afterwards. I'd be interested to see if he's going to feature in the game later. But I have a feeling that the work is going to be psychological as much as it is physical for James Topping and his coaching staff. Listen, they're going to have to go and do something that no team has done in rugby Olympic sevens over the course of the last couple of years. They're going to know that they're up against it. But it's a squad that finished second in the World Series this year. It's a squad that came here with justified reasons of talking about, you know, the potential to win a medal if they could allow things to click in gear. If that's the case, it has to happen come the close of play this evening, because, you know, this is their shot at glory tonight, and they're going to have to put in the performance of their lifetimes, I think.
Hugo Keenan is someone that will be familiar to all rugby fans. How has he transitioned into the seven side?
I think it's been difficult for him, to be very honest with you. I think it's unfair to draw a comparison between him and Antoine Dupont, because they're very, very different players. But if you look, like, Dupont is the poster boy of these games. And ironically, he could either be knocked out with his tail between his legs, you know, Saturday afternoon, or he could be parading around the Stade de France with a medal around his neck on the first day of action, so that, you know, the poster boy will be gone home after the opening day. But, like, when he gets the ball, you get that sense of energy. He's such a fulcrum for what the French team are going to do. But he's had, since the Rugby World Cup final, for the most part, I know he dipped back in at one point during the Six Nations, but he has spent the guts of 12 months preparing for what he hopes are going to be, you know, six matches in France this year. Like, Hugo Keenan has had a significantly reduced period of time to reintegrate into the sevens. So I think it's important not to place too big an expectation on his shoulders. But listen, perhaps he's playing a very significant leadership role behind the scenes. I'm not 100% sure around that. That's not something that we're privy to. But I think he, but not exclusively he, I think he and a couple of the players are perhaps going to be a little bit disappointed at the overall impact that they may have made so far. But what is it? 9 o'clock tonight, Irish time, is an opportunity for them to redeem that, hopefully.
Damien, you've seen them up close and personal now, and you're well aware of the threats that Fiji pose as well. Do they have the level of performance needed to pull through that game?
I think they're going to have to box clever, and I think possession is going to be key. We saw in the latter stages, like the last play of the game that saw New Zealand score that try with 46 seconds of the game to play, Ireland tried to play deep into New Zealand territory to frustrate New Zealand, and literally you gave them half a chance and they went the length of the pitch and carved out a try scoring opportunity. Like Fiji, and you could see it evident in even the French fans earlier, where there was a nervousness around them every time the Fijians got the ball, even like 5 metres out from their own line, you cannot give them an inch of space. So, like, the nature of sevens, you can occasionally stand off and allow a team, you know, try and let a team's play develop, you know, maybe around the 10-metre line or further out the field. You simply cannot do that. So it's going to be, it's, listen, it's, you know, and Rebecca and Paul have, you know, played team sport at the highest level that was available to them. And you know about the issue of, do you go out tonight and try and defuse Fiji's tactics, or do you go out tonight with confidence in your own game? I think Ireland are going to have to protect the ball an awful lot better. I think they're going to have to make decisions in clutch moments an awful lot better, and discipline, and just, it's going to be, and I know it's a cliche about these, it's going to be, need to be the complete 14-minute performance, but this Fiji team is probably, I think, I wouldn't even say probably, it's definitely the most clinical team that I've seen over the 2 days of play here, and Ireland just need to be razor sharp in the execution of everything later on this evening.
We're only watching on the TV, so it's really hard to gauge sometimes just the physical exertion. 14-minute games on paper seem short, but how are the players after they come through it?
Direct. Like, it's interesting. You know, I know, like, Nick Timoney and others have been out doing interviews over the course of the build-up to the games to try and talk about the comparison between one and the other. But, like, Che Mullins came off the field of play after the Japanese game last night, and there was a sense around the Japanese game that Ireland knew they were going to have their number, and, you know, building a points difference was going to be crucial potentially with the seedings. But, like, it was a game that you felt, of the ones they had, they weren't going to have to exert themselves as much as they would perhaps in other games. And, like, I've never seen a fella, you know, and it's that beautiful thing where a lad holds out his arm to to shake your hand after a match and then apologises because he's sweating so profusely. But it's very humid. I don't know what the temperature is at the moment. It was 26 degrees for the latter stages of the games last night, and that's at, like, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock local time. So conditioning is a big thing. But they, I think across the board, it's such a, it's a fantastic, like, it's my first time to really enjoy it in a full stadium. I was at some of the games in Tokyo where, you know, there were 60,000 people, a 60,000 capacity venue, and maybe 150 people there all in, which was such a surreal experience. But, like, the energy here is phenomenal, and to fully appreciate them at full flight, but the intense level of physical exertion in quick bursts, and, you know, the obviously the rolling substitutes help ease that some way along the way, but it is it's sapping. But, you know, you talk to them, you know, the mantra that has existed from some of the players that I've been chatting to over the course of the last couple of weeks is that, listen, the pitch is the same size, the ball is the same size, the schedule is exactly what we're used to. So, you know, they've had a full season of sevens World Series around the world in conditions similar to this. So, yeah, it's sapping, but it's not that they're not used to.
I've been marvelling at the size of the pitch, Damien. It looks absolutely huge. What's it like when you're right beside it?
Now, I've been lucky enough that I've been here for Six Nations games. So, like, it's It feels like the running. So obviously, Stade de France is hosting the rugby sevens now, and then it will become the athletics venue next week or the week after. So it does feel to me like the running track or the gap between the pitch and the stand is fairly significant. I'm told that they've retracted the stands ever so slightly. They have the ability to do that here at the Stade de France, that they can increase the capacity around the lower ring of the pitch. So at the moment, it's fully retracted with the athletics in mind. Like, it's there's a touch, I won't say it's a postage stamp in a massive stadium, but there is quite a bit of a gap between you and the pitch. But the nature of the roof and the cavern, and, like, it's a brilliant atmosphere. I have to say, like, having been here for, you know, Grand Slam deciders, and having been here for, like, crucial games in the Six Nations, I have never had the kind of hair in the back of my neck stand up the way it did when France came out for their opening game yesterday. So the DJ and the festivities and everything else adds to that, but it's I have to say it looks brilliant, and I think when the athletics rolls into town, it's going to look phenomenal. It's an odd one insofar as the pitch here, like, hasn't been up until yesterday, the pitch here hadn't been played on since the Rugby World Cup final. They basically put the stadium into cold storage for that entire period of time. So Australia and Samoa, who played the opening game here last night, their players were the first people to walk onto this pitch. There's, as is always the case, like, there's an army of groundsmen descended upon it, but it looks like a billiards table. They've done a brilliant job, and I'd be quite interested to see what it's going to look like for the Athletics. There's quite a bit of space around what we're used as the infield area, but no doubt they'll fill it well. Sorry, as
I'm picturing you dancing here, as, Damien.
No, do you know what? Like, I feel sorry for just to put it into context. Like, I'm effectively sitting at what is the dead ball line on the pitch, and there's a fella over on the far left corner of the stand. So he's kind of up in line with what would be the corner flag for the soccer pitch. And there's a cameraman in his face, and they've a dance cam on the dance cam on the big screen now, and you know, shaming us all into trying to dance if they put us on it. But I have to say, to be fair, now listen, I'm going to give this fella 10 out of 10 for, I don't want to ruin the illusion. I'm going to presume he's DJing live and he's not just throwing shapes to a backing track, but jeepers, he's as energetic as Jordan Conroy or anyone else that was there. So they've a rotation of DJs who are here over the course of the session. So listen, whoever this lad is now, he's after turning it up to 11 and he's doing his best to give it a bit of sock. So listen, those of us who have been sitting here since what are we now, we're 24 minutes past 7 local time, those of us that have been sitting here since 12 o'clock lunchtime and are waiting for the rugby to start, there's no fear you'd nod off or lose your concentration now with this lad dropping them out. Listen, you're eminently more cultured individuals than me. The one that I still am bemused by is Gala's Freed From Desire. I thought I was going to have the first sporting experience of my life where I was here all day yesterday and I didn't hear Gala's Freed From Desire once. And they obviously found the CD last night because they've played it about 15 times already today. So I'm not sure if Gala is remotely into sport. God bless her, wherever she is in life now. But she must have cleared her mortgage off fellas like this lad using it in try scoring opportunities. I'm going to leave you on one. Well, no, listen, I'm not going to leave you on one point. I'll chat for as long as you want, but I'll finish my rant or monologue about the entertainment with, we don't have the national anthems here as part of the spectacle. And it was funny, you know, people are talking about how great it's going to be to hear the Marseillaise ring out around the Stade de France for the rugby. Well, it didn't happen because we don't have it. And we had one point yesterday, and it's the nature of rugby that you have breaks in play when they go to the TMO or there's an injury or whatever. And at one point yesterday, it must have been the Uruguay game yesterday evening, the crowd took it upon themselves to start singing the Marseillaise. Now, if you've been at a sporting event in France, there is no greater occasion than hearing the Marseillaise in full flight. And what did they do? They drowned it out completely with the type of stuff you're hearing in the background, which... I know that there was controversy around Ireland's summer tour to South Africa, and you know, your players, was it Craig Casey down injured, and quite clearly had suffered a very significant injury, and they got whatever blaring over the tannoy. But I just thought yesterday, you've brought the Olympics to Paris. It's the centenary of it having been here in 1924. There's 15 million people getting ready to descend upon the city. It's the third time the Games have been here. And you have this beautifully organic moment where the French people take the atmosphere into their own hands. And within 10 seconds, it's drowned out by oggy, 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 oi, oi, oi. You know, but sure, listen, do you know what it is? Maybe it's just me being a miserable, cranky outlet, you know? Yeah, well, no, I can guarantee you now, I'll make you one promise, there's not a hope in hell of that happening. So, no, listen, Marie, we're here to work, we're not here to enjoy ourselves, you know, so, no, listen, eyes on the prize. I wouldn't want to miss a try or anything now because I'm doing the Macarena or something, you know, so. Listen, sure, if they played the Macarena now, nobody would know what it is, it's that long ago. So, you know, listen, or whatever, yeah, a bit of Sabrina Carpenter now, or Olivia Rodrigo, and I'll be in my element, you know, so we'll be fine.
I'd like you to put in a few requests. Thanks so much, Damien, enjoy the game.
Mind yourself, see you folks, bye-bye.
See you tomorrow. Okay, we're going to take a very quick break after all of that action all the way from France. We'll be back looking at the Women's National League with Rebecca, and we'll be getting an update on that Shelburne game with Paul.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Shells are currently in Conference League second round qualifying action. They are currently trailing 1-0 to FC Zurich, although I'm seeing that there might be more goals. Paul Corrie.
Yeah, it's not good news. And it was just a Shells were starting to get a bit of a grip in the game, Marie, but it's a really poor mistake from Cameron Ledwich, who gives the ball away on the halfway line, and then it's one pass to split Paddy Barrett and I think it's Sam Bone, and then it's a beautiful finish from the left winger from FC Zurich, who just lifts it over Conor Kearns. So that's 2-0, and on the basis of how the game's gone, I would say it's probably the tie over.
Just a different level.
It is a different level. You can tell looking at the two teams that this is a standard of opposition that Shells haven't faced this year, and probably for a lot of those players haven't faced probably in their career.
What is it? Are they just better on the ball?
Technically better, look physically stronger, quicker over 5-10 yards, and I think when you compound that, it leads to a massive gap. You know, Shells aren't used to playing at that speed probably, and probably not used to being countered on so quickly, and also how clinical teams like that are. You saw it the other night with Sparta Prague and Shamrock Rovers. You make a mistake, they punish you.
Is that the standard of the league, the standard of the footballer, the training, the lack of training?
I think it's just looking at football and realising that there are levels to the game. Our level from a domestic front is nowhere near as competitive as the main leagues across Europe, and that includes the likes of Switzerland and so on. And naturally enough, with football, the way it works is that your better players will rise to the top and they'll leave. And Shells have had to do that with a couple of bodies that they have. You think to the likes of Jack Boylan, who they've lost in recent times. The better players will always move on to a higher level. And FC Zurich obviously have a much bigger budget than Shells and can bring in better players. But technically, it looks like there's a gap. Physically, there looks like a gap. And overall, it's going to be a tough 60 minutes now for Shells. If they could keep it at 2, it'd be brilliant, but it doesn't look that way.
So would you say that it doesn't bode well for St. Pat's later on as well?
Well, that's probably a different story, because the side they're playing, it's a strange one. They're from Liechtenstein, but because Liechtenstein don't really have a league, they play in the second division in Switzerland.
Okay.
Now, how they qualify for this competition is they win the Liechtenstein Cup. They've won it 19 times out of the last 20 years. So they're almost a given to be in European football on a yearly basis. So you would expect that Pats have a little bit of an easier task than what Shells have tonight. And if they were at it, there's no reason why they might not be able to keep the game a little tighter than what we've seen in the first part of this first half with Shells. So be interested to see how they get on. I always think it's difficult for our teams when they go into Europe. It's just a different style of football. The side that Pats are playing will have great experience of playing European competitions based on the fact that they always seem to be in it. But for Shells, it's going to be a tough night.
Okay, let's hear from Stephen Kenny ahead of this game against Liechtenstein side Vaduz.
We appreciate the support we've had this season. It hasn't been a vintage season for the club. It's been a disappointing season overall, but one of the things that can happen then, you get a big European win and it lifts the spirits of everyone, and that has to be the ambition. And we're going to have to really raise our game. Players are wounded after the weekend. And we're going to have to really raise our game for this match. We're really just focusing on this game. I think the first leg, making sure that we become a greater attacking threat. We've stopped scoring goals in the last couple of weeks, and we have to get back to being a real attacking threat. Vaduz will be looking to progress over the two legs. We want to progress over the two legs. You know, it's certainly our ambition to do that. So we need to really raise our game and play at the level we can play it. Every European victory is a great memory for every supporter and player. You know, we must have the motivation to go and do that. We're in round two, the motivation to try and get that big victory if we can and progress. And we'll be giving it everything in our attempts to try and do that.
Yeah, and Murray, just kind of to St. Pat's and talking about their chances, they're going to have to be certainly better than what they were last week, because when they played against Derry, albeit they had a couple of chances in the first half, what's somewhat come into their game in recent months is they concede really sloppy goals, and I don't think you can afford to do that in Europe. They're going to have to be far more solid from a defensive point of view, and they do have players at the top end of the pitch, even the likes of Zach Elbazetti, who's just come in. They've got Mulroney, Forrester. They've players that can hurt you at the top end, but they have to stop conceding soft goals.
It's probably fair to say that Stephen Kenny's arrival hasn't maybe brought the bounce that they were expecting. Do you think that people just need to have patience?
Yeah, they definitely they do need time, but I still think they can be getting better results than what they are showing, and better performances than they've produced in recent weeks. And if it wasn't Stephen Kenny's name on paper as manager of St. Pat's and it was John Daly, would we be giving them the same allowances? Probably not. But I still think that Stephen will get a tick out of that side at some point. He's obviously got really good relationship with some of those under 21s players that he managed with Ireland, like Elbazedi, that he will bring back to that club. There was also talk about Danny Mandreou going back into Pats at one point in time. So he'll get the recruitment right, and I think when he does do that, results will start to turn. But I think with the squad that he has at the moment and the players that they have compared to some of the other teams in the league, I think they're under par.
I'd imagine he's probably frustrated himself as well, though.
Oh, he must be. He must be. I mean, he's used to winning league titles and FA Cups in this league. He's not used to, at least he was in his Duck Dog times, which was so successful, but he's not used to being down where Pats are at this stage of the season, and he won't enjoy, you know, scrapping for draws. He wants to play really expansive football, really exciting football, and winning games in that manner. So it would be hurting him. And obviously, you know, his reputation took a huge dent while he was manager of the senior national side. So he has a bit of repairing to do on that side of things. And I'm sure he sees Pats as a really good opportunity to do that. He's been given a long-term contract. He's not going to be going anywhere. But I still think he can get better performance than the players that he has.
Well, we know that he can bring a team on a run in Europe. So that's something.
He can, but on the basis of their performances in recent weeks, I'm not sure they will be doing that. I'm just looking down through the side. Elbazedi actually comes in tonight for St. Pat's to start. He'll be up alongside Mulroney. Mason Mealy is playing up top as well. So like the likes of Mason Mealy, Marie, like he's 16 years of age, like to be leading the line for a League of Ireland side and then be going into Europe, that's a huge responsibility. And you probably guess with 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds, there's inconsistencies in their performances. And you know, the phrase that I use to sum up Pats' seasons is consistently inconsistent. Some really good performances. They were brilliant against Shamrock Rovers when they won in Richmond Park, and they just haven't been able to back that up consistently enough. So maybe the distraction of a European tie in Richmond Park, packed crowd, maybe this could be a bit of a catalyst moving forward, but it's got to be better than what they've shown, particularly against Derry last week in the FAI Cup.
Well, no doubt they'll be looking at it as an opportunity, especially because the first leg is at home and anything can happen after that. Right, you keep an eye on that Shells game for us, Paul. I want to have a quick chat with Rebecca about the Women's National League, but I do want to start though with the Avenir All-Ireland Cup last night. A tough night at the office for Shelburne, coming up short against Shamrock Rovers, but victory for Galway then over Wexford. It sounded like there were two good games, Rebecca.
Yeah, really, really good. Obviously, firstly out in Tolka, you know, Rovers came out 2-1 winners. I don't know if the performance would warrant that result, but look, that's football, and you know, performances don't win you games. From the get-go, you know, 10 minutes into the game, Shells conceded. Started well, but it was just one of those games where, you know, nothing was happening for Shells, or, you know, falling on the luck side of things. Had about 6 chances, I think, in the first half, and just weren't clinical in front of goal. And at this level, you know, this is what you need to be. And just those instinctive finishes, you know, 2-3 yards out, getting a toe, getting a head onto the ball. But look, the finishes that the Rovers put away in Leo Leary and Joy Ralph, obviously coming off the back of that Euro campaign with the 19s.
Shows the benefit, doesn't it?
Most definitely. Look, the 3 players in their squad last night that played nearly 90 minutes, I think, across 3 games in the 19s competition, and looked so fresh. You know, and obviously two of them being the goal scorers. But yeah, look, disappointment for Shells, given that they still are in a decent, obviously, position in the league. You know, they won't be feeling too hard done by, just a case of getting up, you know, dusting themselves off and going again.
They are second in the league, taking on DL or Waves this weekend, and no doubt will be confident heading into that. And the other side of that then is Athlone, who are top of a very tough game against Beaumont. So a lot to play for this weekend.
Massive, yeah. There's loads to play for. Still a long season to go. You know, obviously with DLR now this weekend, they're quite a young team, really fit. You know, they'll be coming at Shells from the get-go, no doubt. And obviously Athlone are away to Pease, who have brought in some personnel in recent days. I think Aoife Brophy has come in for Pease there. Obviously Erin McLaughlin has left, which would be a massive loss for
them.
Yeah, you know, given they've not really got much depth within the squad this season. But look, they'll be very much up to it, I'm sure, you know, against that loan. And I think this league, there's going to be teams dropping points throughout it over the course of the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's really tight at the top, but I'd say Shell's like been on the top, Rebecca.
most definitely. It's that club, you know, and they expect those standards from their players. So look, they'll be going out now this weekend, hopefully to reap the rewards of hard work. Yeah.
Lots of good games though. Around mid-table there, Cork City and Shamrock Rovers, that should be a good one. 1-6, Cork City in 6th and Shamrock Rovers in 7th.
Yeah, exactly. They're both on level points currently. You know, Cork have done well in their recent games. Rovers have been coming into a bit of form over the course of the last 2 or 3 weeks of the league that they've played. You know, they started off, obviously, you know, amount of draws they've had, I don't think that's, I've ever seen that in the league. They just didn't seem up to it, but they've definitely come into their own the last few weeks, so it'll definitely be a great game there at 5:30 on Saturday.
I've got Paul double jobbing there, keeping an eye on the football. Anything of note from the Women's Olympics today?
Yeah, currently Germany are actually playing Australia. The Germans are 1-0 up. Marina Heuge, let me see, where is she? Yeah, from Wolfsburg, came up trumps there, the header. I'm just looking, there's nearly another chance there for Germany, but they're 1-0 up against Australia currently.
Sorry, if you're both watching football matches while you're in studio.
Tough kick.
Very impressive, yeah. Paul, are Shelburne settling in at all?
Not really. They're starting to look a little leggy. There's 6 minutes left in the first half, Marie, and I think they'd be happy enough to hear the first half whistle. And actually, just reflecting on the two goals that were scored from FC Zurich, both goals came down the left-hand side, which is obviously the right-hand side for Shelburne. You just feel like they're probably missing Sean Gannon, who got sent off last week. Somebody with such
good experience.
Yeah. You know, with Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers winning league titles, up against top players in some of the campaigns that he would have been involved in. Difficult night for Tyreek Wilson, who's filling in that position, but it definitely feels like if he was there, maybe his positioning would have helped out, or just his experience to see out one or two difficult moments. But FC Zurich, Murray, don't show any signs of slowing down here.
Okay, well, I'd say Damien Duff will be trying to regroup there at the break. I wouldn't want to be in that dressing room, although given the calibre of opposition, sometimes there's nothing you can do, Paul, is there?
No, but he didn't hold back in the weekend after the Bray game. And maybe he's seen something in recent weeks that maybe they're coming off the pillow, because yes, playing against top opposition, but I still don't think there's any excuse for conceding 60 seconds into a game.
It's difficult though, juggling everything though, isn't it? Like trying to stay on top of the league and go on and win that. And
then, the cup you know, the pressure that they're going to get from Derry, who will push them hard. And listen, they've recruited quite well and brought in a couple of bodies, but I do agree with you in that sense. Like, it's hard to keep standards as high as what they've set in the first six months of the season. And last week out in Gibraltar would have taken it out of them as well. Then they have to come back, play the FAI Cup, back out to Switzerland again. Players in this league aren't used to that. The majority of players aren't used to that. So getting into that routine of looking after the body and just kind of trying to prepare yourself for games is difficult. And it's also really difficult when you come up against really top players.
Okay, you keep an eye on those games. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll be turning our attention back to the Olympics when we return. Jeff Shepherd will be talking to us about Team USA.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. Paul Carr and Rebecca are with me in studio, both watching football games. Rebecca's keeping an eye on the Olympic action between Australia and Germany, while Paul has eyes on Shells in Europe. They're currently trailing FC Zurich by 2-0. Nearly half-time, Paul?
Yeah, nearly half-time. There is probably about 60 seconds before the fourth official puts his board up. But just looking at kind of like the front players for Shells, Jarvis, Wood and O'Sullivan, honestly, Marie, have hardly had a kick and have done so much chasing in this first half of, you know, side to side and trying to ensure that the ball doesn't go into midfield. So I can imagine how taxing it has been for those three players, and then Mark Coyle and JJ Looney as well. Players who like to get on the ball and have done so really successfully in the league this year, but just can't seem to get a kick of it. And any time they do, they don't really seem to be able to work their way out of their half. FC Zurich are setting up really good traps to win possession back from them. So it's been a really difficult half for the players, and I would say for Shane Dawson too.
Oh yeah, when's he back? We'll have a good chat with him about that. High hopes there. Right, we're going to turn our attention now to Olympic sports once again. Jeff Shepherd is with us all the way from the United States of America. And Shep, one of my favourite things about watching the Olympics is seeing all of the Team USA athletes because they bring such flair and excitement, and it's so difficult to even get on Team USA in any of the sports as well, that you really know you're watching the best of the best. What's the hype like about the Olympics stateside?
You know, Marie, you may have heard, but it's been a bit of a wild summer from a political angle here in the United States of America. And, you know, we typically don't delve into that, and we're not going to do that here. But I think everyone is really hoping that the next couple of weeks in Paris, you know, that the American athletes can go out and, you know, represent us and do their thing and wear the red, white, and blue and kind of bring some folks together. You know, it seems like it's desperately needed now more than ever. And so, yeah, I agree with you 100%. You know, the opportunities are endless for some, you know, some really career-defining, record-breaking performances from some American athletes. And, you know, I'm really excited to see how they respond.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess top of that list is Simone Biles. She's the greatest of them all. And it still feels like she's going to this Olympic Games with something to prove, even though she's nothing to prove, but you know that she wants to go and do something amazing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously a couple of years ago, you know, she had the mental health issue that, you know, kind of really, you know, for, you know, lack of a better pun, you know, vaulted that issue into our minds. And it's something that, you know, she obviously remains passionate about, and she's gotten married and, you know, kind of, you know, lives a little bit of a public life out on social media. But I mean, just, you know, it speaks for herself, her achievements, you know, as a gymnast. You know, we saw just a couple of weeks ago, you know, in practice, Marie, you know, she was doing the floor exercise, and she has this move. Her head was like 12 feet in the air, you know? I mean, like, like we're not the same species. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, she's an alien. I mean, and I mean that in the nicest way possible, you know? So, you know, at some points it kind of feels like she's really only, you know, has to prove herself against herself. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, you know, she didn't win the gold in the last Olympics. And so obviously that's big time motivation. So, I mean, I think she wants to, you know, rectify that and kind of, you know, go out as, you know, the greatest, which she could clearly do. And I think she's feeling good about it. But yeah, it's been an interesting ride here the last, you know, maybe what, 5-6 years with her.
And anybody wanting to get enthused for the gymnastics, to Shep's point about Simone Biles being an alien, some of the stuff that she does in her Netflix documentary in the build up right to the Paris Olympics, it's absolutely insane.
I just don't know how she gets so much time in the air to do all of the tricks that she does up there.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, they were I was reading an article about her yesterday, and it's like one of the moves is like a triple reverse twist flip, and I'm like, I can't even, like, I can't
that.
Picture that.
Yeah.
It sounds like
that's
a chocolate
what I'm saying,
party.
You know? Yeah. It's like if the steps are out of order, it's a completely different, you know what I'm saying? It's just, it's mind-boggling. But, you know, for her to be able to kind of think, you know, on that level, that's how just athletic and gifted she is, that she has time to think, like, what if I just did this, like, 4 times when, you know, everybody else does it too? You know? I mean, it's just crazy.
I'd love to see her, because apparently she's absolutely tiny. When she went on an airplane last year, somebody, the air hostess, gave her colouring pencils and a colouring book. So she must be like really, 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 really youthful and tiny at the same time. So I would love to see her. But no. I guess to be that successful with gymnastics, most of them are really slow centre of gravity. Let's move on to LeBron James, the return of the king. He skipped a couple of Olympic Games, and he's 39 now, so it's probably fair to say this could be his last Olympic Games. But how amazing is it to have LeBron James at the Paris Olympics?
Yeah, so he's looking for, I believe, his 4th Olympic gold medal, you know, which, again, I mean, you know, when you're playing team sports, you know, I mean, that gets you up into, you know, rarefied air, you know, in the history of these, you know, modern games. You know, Marie, it's funny you said, you know, he's 39, you'd think this will be his last one. I mean, how many years did you and I talk about Tom Brady?
Yeah,
I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I mean, we talked about Tom Brady for the better part of, you know, the late teens there, you know, whether or not he was going to hang it up. So I do find it interesting. You know, he's got Steve Kerr is coaching the U.S. team. I mean, look, they're the favorites. You know, this isn't going to, this hasn't been like the dream team, you know, in 92, where they've just been so far and away better than everybody else. They've actually struggled in some warm-up games. They barely beat Germany a couple of nights ago. They almost, you know, suffered a humiliating defeat to South Sudan you know. And Steve Kerr says they're just kind of lethargic, you know. I'm assuming it's a lot of the look, we're the U.S., we're just going to roll the ball out here and we're going to just, you know, roll over everybody. But as we've seen, and I mean, look, they lost a game in Tokyo in 2021. So it's not like that they're, you know, undefeatable. So he's just, you know, he's been talking to the guys about, look, we're here. It's time to get real. I mean, they had a meeting last night where he played a bunch of, instead of highlights, a bunch of low lights, you know, hey, look, we're losing these loose balls. We're missing shots. Shots are getting blocked. This is the stuff that we have to avoid. And I think a lot of that starts with LeBron. You know, I mean, he's going to be the captain. He's going to be the guy. He's one of the flag bearers in the opening ceremonies. So, you know, I would think he probably is going to feel a lot of personal responsibility this time around.
Yeah, well, he is quite old. So, I mean, that comes with age as well. what's the latest with his son? Because I know there was quite a lot of controversy about his contract. Bronny?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there was quite a lot of talk about, you know, why the Lakers, you know, went ahead and drafted him. And it is obvious because they wanted to keep LeBron in Los mm-hmm. Angeles. I mean, he could have had the ability to go anywhere if he wanted to. But, you know, he has said since his son was probably, you know, 7 or 8 years old and started to become one of the better players of his age group, you know, that his dream was to hang around in the NBA long enough to maybe one day be able to play with his son. And so we've kind of gotten to that point now. He was by no means, you know, a great college basketball player when he was at USC or anything like that. I think he maybe averaged 4 points a game or something like that. But the Lakers were obviously, you know, doing it to make LeBron happy and keep him in town. So, I mean, we'll see. It's summer league. I mean, this, you know, is going on right now. It's so hard to gauge anything because, you know, it's not pure NBA competition. I'm not sure how much he'll play if he makes the Lakers roster. But again, I think it's all about keeping LeBron happy in Los Angeles.
I can see the logic behind that as well. So the Athletics, I think that's really where people get laser focus on Team USA because they have so many big stars and so much medal potential, the likes of Noah Lyles, Sha'Carri Richardson, and my favourite, Sydney McLaughlin, LeVron. Who are you looking forward to most, Shep?
Well, you know, it's been, you know, the last couple of years, or I should say the last several Olympic Games, you know, everything in the swimming pool has been about Michael Phelps. Mm-hmm. And then there's also Katie Ledecky, who has been phenomenal. You know, she is, you know, quote unquote, getting up there as well in age. You know, it's just because she's been around for several Olympics. And I think I'm looking for her to have another stellar performance as well. I mean, she's been one of the most decorated female swimmers in the world, you know, here the last decade or so. And I think she's going to want to have, you know, another phenomenal run or swim here in Paris.
7-time Olympic gold medal. She's a 21-time world champion. So, again, an absolute superstar. You've a lot of superstars, Shep, to be fair.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes, but, you know, if they don't win, you know, then they catch more heat than everybody else does, too. You know, it's the double-edged sword, Marie. So I think, you know, a lot of that pressure, you know, that they put on themselves, you know, the U.S. Olympic trials, just the competitions, I mean, that is, you know, has been phenomenal. That was phenomenal to watch over the last couple of months kind of leading up to this. And so, you know, I do think this team is poised to do, you know, really well. You know, they should love the climate. You know, and I'm sure a lot of them have been to Paris before too. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be like, you know, crazy, you know, completely different culture, you know, and that can kind of get in people's heads as well too. So I think they're expecting big things.
Great. Shep, we'll be tuning in to all of it. Thank you so much. I will be chatting to you again next week. Before we finish up, we are going to check back in with Paul and Rebecca with the football ongoing. Paul, still halftime, nothing going on.
No, nothing going on, and I guess now is decision time for Damien Duff and Joey O'Brien, whether or not they change it based on what they've seen in the first half and try fresh it up with some new bodies and new faces and try something different, or do you just continue to try contain and keep this at 2-0 for as long as you possibly can? 2-0 wouldn't be the worst result to bring back to Talca Park, but just looking at the two teams, it still feels like it'll be a really, really stiff test.
What would you do?
Good question. I think I'd probably wait until 60-65 minutes, and if it's still 2-0, maybe try bring on fresh legs at the top end of the pitch and see if you can change it up from there, because they do have good options
on the bench,
yeah, from an attacking perspective in particular. And I wouldn't be surprised if he was to maybe wait 15-20 minutes to just see how it plays out.
Rebecca, your game, Germany and Australia?
Yeah, gone in. Germany 1-0 up against Australia. Brazil 1-0 up then in their game against, let me just
<It'll> be,
Nigeria, sorry. Yeah, so well, not much to report.
This has been great. I mean, people coming in, watching football matches. That's what we like. The start of the Olympics, the opening ceremony coming up tomorrow. So just before we finish up, the boxing draw was held this evening. It started at 6:15. It's still ongoing and it's very complicated. We don't have the full rundown yet, but we do know that Kelly Harrington has a bye to the second round where she's either going to meet a Turkish or Italian opponent. All of that will become clear in the next little while and you'll be able to find all the information about the boxing draw on the RTÉ Sport website. Rebecca and Paul, thank you so much as always for coming in. That is all we have time for this evening. I'll be back tomorrow because it's All-Ireland football final weekend. We've got a big game preview, so much to look forward to in that. So do tune in. January Winters is up next.